What are you gonna do today, Napoleon?
Whatever I feel like I wanna do. Gosh!
Welcome to episode 36 of the Skip to the End podcast, the first one of a brand new year. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And it's going to be a big show. It's going to be a big year. So let's start it off with a bang. We're going to review the brand new film, the eighth film from Quentin Tarantino, The Hateful Eight.
Will it be The Hateful Great?
That's weak, dude. That's weak. That is some weak sauce right there.
Big build up and already we've fallen.
What else are we doing?
I've ruined the year already.
Let's write it off. We're also going to be talking about our top three movie comebacks. So it might be actors, actresses, directors, composers, whomever. Doesn't matter. Top three comebacks of all time. We're also going to be skipping back in time to 1994, which I think is going to be an interesting one. I feel there might be some overlap.
It's a good year.
Yeah, it's a good year. We've got a brand new quiz coming out. What's it called, Adam?
Lost in Translation. I'm not giving too much away like I didn't. You'll find out on the episode.
I'm assuming we're just going to ask questions about Bill Murray.
Yes.
I presume that's the whole quiz. Yep. And we're also going to talk about the top five films of the year, aren't we, Mark?
We are. And also the worst film in our opinion, which is going to be very interesting to discuss. Yeah. And
I imagine there should be some overlap there.
Yeah, a tad.
And we're going to give away a limited edition one-off T-shirt.
Yeah, that is very limited. Very. If one.
I know. That's the definition of limited. If we ever see it on eBay, we know who's won it. Yeah, we're going to hunt you down.
Ooh, that'll go for a lot of buns.
Especially
because I've worn it. And we're also, I forgot this, we're also re-watching Napoleon Dynamite.
Gosh.
That'll be a bit of fun. Mark and I love that film. Adam's only seen it once.
Yeah, I've always been told to watch it again and I have now. So.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. Sounds like a good one. So, let's get started. First topic of a new year, top three comebacks. So actors, directors, composers, anything you like, but someone who has a strong movie history, disappeared for whatever reason, and then has come back to the fore. Tricky topic, lads?
Ish, yeah. I think it's all about kind of what you define as the comeback.
Mm-hmm.
I often find, like, if it's an actor, you'll find that they've not really disappeared per se.
Mm-hmm.
They've just gone off and done a lot of things that were very critically panned or under the radar.
Yeah.
And then there's been one kind of major role that's really thrust them back in the spotlight.
What do you think, Mark?
I'm thinking if we don't have any duplicates on this, I'll buy you both a pint.
Brilliant. I think, here's my bet, I think one or both of us are going to have the same actor, but with a different film. That's my wager.
Stay tuned, listeners.
Stay tuned. Oh, they're on edge now. They're on the edge of their seats. Go on, Mark, tell us your first one.
Mickey Rourke,
The
wrestler.
Yeah.
So I know he had a bit of a brief comeback with Sin City, but it wasn't enough of a performance that really wowed me. It wasn't a major role.
Yeah.
But when he came back as The Wrestler, I really started to take notice of him again. And I thought, for the whole film, he pretty much carried the whole film. It's his performance. Did he get an Oscar for it?
He was nominated.
He was nominated.
Didn't win.
Oh, that's a shame.
He lost out to Sean Penn.
Yeah.
The Milk.
Yeah, that's right.
That's fair enough. But to see that he was nominated is good. But that performance was mind-blowing. And I really like the fact that it then led him to do more work again and people started taking him seriously again. And I'm sure we'll see a lot more of him in the next few years again in some big upcoming films.
I don't know, actually, because I thought that when he had that performance.
As I said, I was thinking, what's he done? But that film was enough.
People seem to forget that film was 2009.
Yeah. I think he did Sin City too.
Yeah.
And again, that killed his career.
So that's it, he's gone.
But it was a huge comeback.
Yeah.
Not only was it the biggest film that he'd done in a while the thing he was most recognised for in a long time. But as you say, he got Oscar nominated for it. It was sort of a bolt out of the blue. Phenomenal performance as well.
It kind of leads back to the point that I made earlier about the actor, because I've got him down for Sin City. But you could argue that his first real major performance, or major critically acclaimed performance, was The Wrestler.
Yeah.
But when he played Marv in Sin City, he pretty much carries that film for 30 minutes just on his own.
That he does.
And it's perfect, because as a fan of the Sin City graphic novels, he is Marv.
Yeah.
Like, he is him. He lives, he breathes, and he was perfect for it. So he's on my comeback list as well for Sin City instead of The Wrestler.
So when I wagered that two of us would have the same actor for different films, I was right, even though that is not the actor I was thinking of.
But yeah, what a good thing about that as well is I've read a lot of WWE wrestlers have come out and said how well he portrayed a wrestler. Mm. It wasn't silly, over the top. It was, they could put themselves in their shoes and relate to certain scenes. And that was, it was nice to see the respect he got for that, when you think a lot of wrestlers could be moaning, saying it's not right, that's not a true representation of what we're about.
Particularly a lot of the guys from the 80s.
Yeah.
The guys who lived that sort of life. It was kind of before the big money came into wrestling.
Yeah.
But you're still putting your body on the line every night.
I think it might have been Roddy Piper. It was one of those guys who said something like, when he saw it, it was difficult to watch because it sort of hit too close to home.
Yeah.
They saw a lot of
themselves.
Was it Randy the Ram was his name?
Yeah,
Randy
the Ram.
They saw a lot of him in themselves or their friends.
Yeah. Or Ric Flair said he cried, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it was just so true to life. It's, you know, trying to have this relationship with his daughter, which is a fantastically emotional side of it. But then to go out there and meet his fans, and then the bit where he has the heart attack and the
spoiler alert. Have you ever seen the documentary Beyond the Mat?
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant documentary that followed a load of wrestlers. This was in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And one of the wrestlers they followed was Jake the Snake Roberts. And, you know, there was a lot of Randy the Ram in Jake the Snake. Yeah. My first one then, John Travolta, Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Surely one of or both of you have this in
your
list.
I've got him here.
Yeah, I thought you would have.
See, I didn't. I strayed away from it. I knew you.
Because you knew. Yeah, exactly, yeah. He was in the wilderness for a long while. I think it was 1977, he was Oscar nominated for Saturday Night Fever.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did a lot of sort of shitty but popular
films.
The
80s were generally very unkind to his career.
Especially the late 80s, and then, you know, encroaching into the 90s. And it wasn't until 94 when he did Pulp Fiction. And Tarantino has this habit, which we now take for granted, but I think it might have been the first time he did it, of pulling big actors kind of out of obscurity and giving them another chance at a career. And he doesn't do it to save people's careers. He does it because he respects their work. And
yeah,
he, for whatever reason, when he wrote this part, he thought of Travolta, brought him into the film, and he nailed it.
Absolutely.
Superb character.
Yeah, I mean, there's no arguments from me. Mm. The guy, his performance in Pulp Fiction, like a lot of the guys in Pulp Fiction, is just... Tarantino seems to, and we'll probably talk about this later, he seems to elevate people from one level to another.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic to watch. And Travolta in Pulp Fiction is a prime example of that. Especially for someone who must have been so low on confidence.
Yeah.
Going into that film.
The worst part was when you said he did a lot of shite in the 80s and 90s. Look who's talking. You know what I mean?
Right, and look who's talking
too. I thought that's the film you're going to choose.
Oh, when you said look who's talking, I thought you were saying to Ben.
Yeah.
You know.
He did a lot.
I did a lot of shite.
You said he did a lot of
shite
in the 80s.
I did some really poor films in the 80s.
The bad thing about this is, though, is his career's kind of gone down again now.
Yeah.
If you ever look at these really bad straight-to-DVD films, really bad lately, like just stuff that looks like a copy of something like... Taken. It's a copy of Taken, and it'd be like Hostage 7. It'd be him on the cover, really bad hairline, and it's like, I need to kill her, otherwise she might kill me. And I'm like, what is this tripe?
I think the only person in Hollywood that has worse hairline or wigs is Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Those two in films always have ridiculous hair.
There was
some John Travolta film that I caught on TV the other week where he had... So, Adam, to be honest, I was about to say he had this long, greasy hair. I'm looking at you, brother. His hair was not dissimilar to yours right now. Adam, dear listener, has Peter Parker's hair in Spider-Man 3. That emo cut.
It's amazing.
I've just been really lazy and I've not been to the hairdressers in a long time. It's not my usual hairstyle, listeners, don't worry.
I think one of the first films he did after Pulp Fiction was a film called Michael, where he played an angel.
Wow.
Have you ever seen this?
Yes, yes.
One of the shittest films that's ever been made. Absolutely shocking.
When was Battlefield Earth?
Let's not talk about it.
God damn.
Because
I've got him in my list for that. That was a great comeback for him.
What's your next one? Because obviously I've doubled up there.
Yours
so I've saved myself 20 quid. Won the bet.
So I'm now going to go with Ben Affleck, The Ooh. Town.
Okay, yeah.
He was towards the sort of early 2000s, late 2000s. He was doing a lot of these chick flicks, things like that. You know, he was seen as that kind of smug, good-looking guy you'd see in films, and mm-hmm. he'd done stuff like Mallrats.
Sure. You know.
And then he came back. He actually came back directing with Gone Baby Gone.
Great film.
And it's fantastic. But as an actor, he came back, he wrote, directed, produced, and starred in The Town. Mm-hmm. And it is an absolutely phenomenal. Have you both seen The Town?
Oh, yeah.
It is a phenomenal performance in so many different aspects, not just his acting, but his directing as well.
Yeah.
And we all know Affleck is this brilliant director anyway.
Yeah.
And he's really kind of recaptured his career again, because it looked like he was going into the wilderness a bit and just doing a few bits and pieces here. Mm-hmm. He seemed to take some time out, focus on what he wanted to do, and he came back with a bang.
He did. It was amazing how the industry had started to lose respect for him because yeah. of, you know, he was doing a lot of shit films like Geely and all that sort of stuff. And then he refocused himself and his efforts on directing.
Yeah. Made just reinvented him.
Reinvented completely. Himself, made a name for himself in that field, and then was like, oh, I'm going to start acting my films again. I'm going to show him I can act.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to direct and write this, and then I'm also going to star in it because yeah. it's a part I wrote. And
exactly. And then that all culminated with Argo, which obviously he directed well. Brilliantly, yeah. and he's great in that as an actor as well.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I've got Ben Affleck here.
He has got more rats.
No, I went with Argo. So I completely agree with what you say, but Argo is the performance that made me then go, it wasn't just a one-off.
Right, yeah.
But I can't disagree with what you're saying. That his CV for directing and filmmaking is 3 out of 3.
He's 3 for 3, yeah.
He's
yeah.
perfect.
Gone Baby Gone
and
rules.
If he gets Batman next, great. Don't mess it up.
That's the big rumour now, isn't it? They want to give him the keys to the kingdom at DC and say, go off and do a Batman franchise for us.
Absolutely.
There's a few people online at the moment who've said they've seen very early screeners or stuff of the new Batman film, uh-huh. Batman Superman, and said that he is absolutely unbelievable.
I don't think it's to be believed, if I'm completely honest.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I've read a lot of rumours of people that said they've been to a screening at Warner Brothers, but I can't imagine Warner Brothers would be, even if people were signing NDAs and stuff like that, would be screening the biggest hit film for next year.
Now.
Then again, we say next year, or, you know, this year.
Sorry, this year,
it's
yeah,
already January. It comes out, was it next month? Or
March, I think.
Yeah, so we're not that far off. We're talking sort of eight, 9 weeks away.
But I still can't imagine they'd be screening for, you know, Joe Bloggs or something to bring people in to test.
That said, I went to a screening at Warner's yesterday, and it's pretty good, yeah?
But yeah, Argo for me blew me away, and it just showed it wasn't a one-off. Yeah, and yeah. I love the guy. I absolutely besotted with his directing mm-hmm. and his vision, and I think he probably learnt off Kevin Smith.
Can we cut there? So, you know my bet about how we'd have the same actor in different films? Twice we've done that now, still not the actor I was thinking of. So here's my next one then, which is the one I think we might have in two films. Robert Downey Jr.
Yep.
I'm thinking you've got him in Iron Man.
I've got him in Tropic Thunder.
I've got him in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. See, the conventional wisdom is that
it's Iron Man.
The Iron Man was his big comeback, and that, you know, that's the film where he got a shitload of money and became a worldwide superstar again. But the film where he was first allowed to carry a movie for a long time after prison and drug addiction, and rehab and whatnot,
persona non grata, as we've said
in
before.
Hollywood, exactly, was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was written and directed by Shane Black, who wrote the original Lethal Weapon films and has since written and directed
Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3. And he's so to put the trust in a guy who Hollywood just simply didn't trust. And, and I'm sure I heard at one point he was uninsurable. Companies like Warner's or whoever would not insure him to work because they assumed that he would get carted off to rehab 2 minutes into shooting.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Ali McBeal, he got like a bit part in.
Yeah.
And then he basically failed 2 drug tests in about a year. And then carted off again to rehab.
And I'm sure I read something at the time, he was on like pay-as-you-play type deal. He only got paid if he turned up. He wasn't on a contract because they didn't trust him to
have
one.
Such a liability.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, Shane Black said, I think you're perfect for this role. Him and Val Kilmer in that film are so good. And that, I think, was the little boost he needed. And then he went on to get things like Iron Man and Tropic Thunder, in which he is brilliant.
Yeah.
And Oscar-nominated as well. So that is a huge comeback. The family.
And it's so rare for a comedy film to get that kind of prestige as well.
Mm.
To actually have the, you know, I think the best supporting actor, wasn't it?
It was. And the fact that, you know, for a lot of the film, he was in blackface. He got an Oscar nomination.
Yeah,
It's just he's been phenomenal for the last probably 8 or 9 years now.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see why Marvel are willing to keep trying to get him to sign on again for another three films, but he's being very clever in the way he's doing things now, because he's not signing these big picture deals that Marvel like.
Yeah.
So it's quite impressive. But yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I can't argue with.
Yeah.
But for me, it was Tropic Thunder. Again, it was kind of the film where he had probably second or third kind of attempt at getting back in now.
Yeah.
And this was the one that was like, okay, this guy can be trusted to do that. Mm-hmm. And Marvel clearly saw that as well.
I can't disagree. I wish I had picked Iron Man. I was going to have done it, but I think that's all of us.
No, I've still got one more.
You've still got another one? Jesus. I'm all out.
Are you all out as well, Adam?
I am, yeah.
So my last one, then is Burt Reynolds in Boogie Nights.
Nice.
Yeah. Again, another man like Travolta, whose biggest days were the 70s. I think he might have been nominated for an Oscar in the 70s, but he was certainly in big films like Cannonball Run. And that might not sound like a big film to us now, but back in the day, Burt Reynolds was an A-lister, making these sort of knock-around comedies. Did nothing for a long time. And then Paul Thomas Anderson put him in Boogie Nights as a pawn baron. And in fact, I think it was his first Oscar nomination. And he's so good in that film. And again, it was another one. It's a shame that he didn't quite capitalise on it. Because he's one of those guys who, he's reached a certain age where he could... There are a lot of roles out there for old men. You know, they can play sort of worldly wise characters.
Yeah.
He could have done more with that. But then I think he just went and did a lot of shitty comedies that weren't worthy of his talents, you know. He could have done a lot more.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, now he's obviously appearing on American talk shows in the morning saying that Charlie Sheen deserves HIV.
Yes, he did say that, didn't he? Yeah.
And he does have the best moustache in the history of film, in my opinion.
He may have been misquoted, but I think he said something along the lines of he's been a very naughty boy.
I don't think he was misquoted, because I'm sure you showed me this. Oh, the other day, yeah. And I think the exact words of the quote was, he deserved it.
But we won't take it away from his comeback and making this topic, but... Boogie Nights, just talking about it, I want to watch it again, because you forget how many great people are in that film.
Yeah, Marky Mark.
He's the one.
Yeah, Julianne Moore.
Amazing.
I've not seen this film for about 7-8 years.
Yeah.
So it's good. One of those
future rewatch, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Big time.
Right, that's it, I think. We're all done.
Yeah.
Crazy. Do you want to know what the next topic is for episode?
No, don't worry about it. We'll just we'll figure it out. We'll bring a list.
Top three moustaches in films. I want to have a topic on the next episode of the top three films.
You mean like we do always?
Yeah. Inspired by true stories.
Okay.
I like that. That's quite good.
Cool.
So I thought we'd go nicely with The Revenant, which we're reviewing on the next episode.
Yeah.
I think it's quite interesting. You looked at me as you said it. It's like, I was sitting there thinking, is it top three hairstyles?
Bottom three.
So yeah. So top three films based on a true story.
Love it.
We've been to our local View cinema to see The Hateful Eight, the eighth film from Quentin Tarantino. It's a kind of a Western.
It's kind of a Western mystery.
Yeah.
A whodunit and what's kind of going on type thing.
Kind of like an Agatha Christie Western.
Written by Tarantino.
But with a lot of murders and racism. It's pretty much all set in one room, so it's kind of like a play. Yeah, it's about nine people, actually. It's called The Hateful Eight, but there are nine of them in this room. I think one of them isn't hateful, OB, who's like the coach driver or whatever. He's not counting The Hateful Eight because he's actually innocent.
Yeah.
But it's about eight dickheads, essentially, who come together for various reasons. There's a hangman, a couple of bounty hunters, some criminals, blah, blah, blah. And they all get stuck in this room, and it's about what happens to them.
Yeah.
Usually, I would throw it out to one of you and say, what are your thoughts? But I'm going to... Go with me first, and I've kind of given the game away. I really hated this film. To me, it was like a cross between Reservoir Dogs and Django Unchained, but nowhere near as good as either. It was a colossal disappointment to me, and that's coming from someone who...
Yeah, one of Tarantino's loves biggest fans.
Oh, big time. Love the guy, love his work. Even his lesser films like Death Proof and Kill Bill 2, I still thoroughly enjoy.
What's really good is I'm a bit on the fence, so parts of this film I love... So we'll get to this in a bit, but there's parts about it I hated, and I was kind of wanting you two to sway me today on this podcast by the end. So I'm bang in the middle at the moment. The cinematography and the filming and there's moments, the soundtrack I thought was unreal because it was the same guy that did The Thing.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of unused The Thing soundtrack on there, so it was making me think of The Thing. But my God, I've never sat in a cinema and it felt longer than 3 hours. It was probably, I honestly thought it was 5 hours. All the hateful 8 hours. It was ridiculous. It was so long.
So this is you on the fence, yeah?
But there was bits about it I really liked. And I thought some of the deaths were great and the gore was great. And the acting from some of the actors was brilliant.
Oh, the acting was super. Yeah. We'll come to that. But Adam, what are your overall thoughts?
He loved it.
No, I was indifferent towards it. I didn't really feel strongly, I think. We've spoken before about how great Tarantino is and how much of a sponge he is for his influences. And how he draws upon kind of everything that he sees and watches. And he molds that into his next project. As you've already touched upon, it felt like he just wanted to be a sponge for his own work.
Yeah.
And then put it out there again.
Yeah.
Because it did, it literally felt like Reservoir Dogs, but in a Western setting.
Yeah.
And
it just didn't pack the punch that Reservoir Dogs... The thing that Reservoir Dogs had, and the thing that this is going to sound terrible, the thing that The Thing had, which is a film he's tried to emulate by his own admission, is they had that sense of paranoia. Yeah. Being sort of locked in one room, that tension and paranoia of, you know, who's the alien or who's the narc, you know. This film didn't have that. It's supposed to be, you know, who's the murderer, who's here to try and F us over. And I just didn't care. I didn't feel it.
And that's it. The whole problem it has is that you care about none of them.
Yeah.
Literally, you don't care about any character. In Reservoir Dogs, the Tim Roth character, the cop, is he's the guy you care about.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that's gone undercover. He's putting his life on the line to do this. In The Thing, Mac, and the whole crew, really, to an extent, you don't want them to be killed by this creature from outer space.
Oh, because it's an outside force, yeah.
Whereas in this, there isn't any of that. There's no one in here you care about.
Exactly, and I think the name gives it away. It's the Hateful Eight. They are meant to all be terrible people, which is all well and good, but it means that you don't then empathise with any of them. You don't have anyone to root for.
The closest you get to actually liking someone in it is probably, for me, Tim Roth. But even you even know that he's a bastard because he's not who he says he is. And one of them's clearly the murderer. It's just like it just seemed like he was very unsure when he made this as to the directions he wanted it to go in.
Yeah.
You totally hit the nail on the head with the whole, it's just lacking a hero. It's lacking that root. And and you saying that whole kind of, it's his own homage to his own film.
Yeah.
It's like, backtrack a bit, mate. You used to do 8 film. You're very respected, and a lot of people have got time for you, but you're better than that.
Yeah.
Keep coming up with some original ideas, because Inglourious was perfection.
Amazing, yeah.
And it's Django Unchained, brilliant.
And it's not a slight against him in any way. Yeah.
No.
His next film, I'll go and watch it.
Yeah.
Because his track record's been phenomenal.
Of course, yeah.
It's going to be another one of these, though, isn't it? He's doing another Western.
Well, this is something I was thinking yesterday, actually. His last 3 films have been historical. You know, World War II, pre-Civil War and post-Civil War, all old-school films. It's about damn time he did a film set in the modern era again.
Yeah.
He's not done a... Even Jackie Brown was set in, like, the 80s or something.
Yeah.
When was the last time he did a film that was set now?
He hasn't, has he?
Kill Bill 2, mate? I don't know.
I don't really know what the setting for Kill Bill necessarily was. I know it was sort of modern, but I think a decade it was supposedly based in.
So, you know, it's about time he tried to translate his skills, of which are innumerable, to the modern age and just do I hasten to say normal film. Nothing about him is normal. Nothing he does is normal. He's exceptional. But I want him to do a film set in the current age to see if he can make it work.
Yeah. And let's just quickly talk now about one thing that Tarantino is known for, dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So what were you thinking in this film? What's for you, how were the interactions? How was the dialogue?
Well, as I said earlier, it was too much like a play for me. And I know I'm going to sound like a philistine, but plays are awful. Nobody wants to watch plays. That's why they invented film, right? And this is like a play. It's pretty much all set in one room. It's just people talking at each other. And I love his dialogue. I love his way with words. But it became tiresome to me. And I've never felt that before about a Tarantino film. It was just grating after a while that it was just talk, 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 talk. And then occasionally a gush of blood. And then talk, 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 talk.
Yeah.
It just became tedious to me.
And I think, again, you've kind of touched upon the best point about it there, which is some of the interactions are great.
Yeah.
Some of them not so great.
Mm-hmm.
And when it is all set in one room, it's all very enclosed, you can't escape it.
Yeah.
Like you can't brush over it with something else. Like a fantastic visual or a wonderful shot can't happen to brush over a bit of tedious dialogue. There isn't anything else keeping you engaged apart from the characters talking.
It's all very static in that one one very small cabin.
With the occasional shots from different places in the cabin, mm-hmm. like, you know, the bar and the kitchen. And it just, it didn't really work.
Yeah.
I'm pretty impatient when it comes to films, and I'm irritable, and I get to the point where after 5 minutes I lose interest, mm-hmm. and that's my own problem. But in this film, it was really testing me to the point where at the start we are introduced with Samuel L. Jackson's character, and we get Kurt Russell in the back of a cart, and I thought, great, it's not straight into the building that everyone keeps on about. And I was like, this is great, I'm really looking forward to this. Within 10 minutes they're there, and that was it then for 2 hours and 58 minutes, and I'm like, Jesus, like you said, I just wanted to see a mountain or something else, and it got to the point where the dialogue bored me.
Yeah.
There was no purpose mm-hmm. to some of it, and I lost interest.
Yeah, me too.
And after an hour and a half, I'm looking at my watch thinking, there's still another hour and a half to go. Nah, I've not got patience.
And when have you ever done that with a Tarantino film before? When have you ever looked at your watch in a Tarantino film? Never.
No.
And I think there were too many characters. Because it was such a static film in a small room, there were too many characters. It should have been The Hateful Four. It shouldn't have been The Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
For example, Michael Madsen's character. Now, we all know that Michael Madsen is one of Tarantino's besties. He puts him in half of his films because he loves him. There was no need for his character. His character's got about six lines. He doesn't do anything of any worth.
He's just standing there.
He's there for one reason, and that's to add a bit more mystery to the situation of, was it him then?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. There's no real value to him other than just sort of meet in the room. Could have got rid of him.
Yeah.
Bang, one down, Hateful Seven.
Who's next on the chopper?
There are several. For me, that film should have been Samuel L. Jackson, Kurt Russell, and Walton Goggins, who plays the sheriff.
Yep.
Who, for me, was the best thing in it by a country mile. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And I'm a huge mark for Walton Goggins because I know his TV work. He was in a cop show called The Shield, which is the best cop show ever made. Now, I've told you boys about how great this show is. I don't think either of you have seen it. You need to get on Netflix and watch it. He was also in a show called Justified, which is a show about a US Marshal. He was the bad guy in that. He's a brilliant, brilliant actor. And movie directors are starting to cotton onto this now and put him in stuff. And Tarantino loves him because he was in Django as well. He's my favourite thing in that film by a country mile. And I didn't expect him to kind of be the hero of the piece in a way. We're saying there was no sort of character you could, you know, climb onto, but for someone who at the start of the film was marked out as being a racist,
a
Confederate,
gun-toting Confederate racist,
he turns out being the one you kind of empathise with by the end. But I think that's down to his acting more than anything, because I thought he was superb.
And that was another thing about the whole script. I mean, it's spoiler alert, the ending scenes where it's him and Sam Jackson left alive with with Donahue, the main female.
What's her name? Domagay?
Donaghy or something like that.
Not
see,
Irish.
See, this is it. This is how memorable this whole film appears to be.
Mm.
Him and Sam Jackson are best mates.
Yeah. Which I kind of, I couldn't tell whether that's supposed to be the message of the film, because Samuel L. Jackson obviously is a black fella and he was on the side.
Spoiler. Massive spoiler. If you've not seen the film, maybe don't listen to this. Samuel L. Jackson's black in the film.
He's not going to get any work now. You know, in the film, he was a Union soldier.
Yeah.
And then Walton Goggins' character, Chris Mannix, was a Confederate soldier. So they're on the opposite side of the Civil War. They're marked out as being enemies from day one, you know, opposed to each other in every single way. And they turn out to sort of help each other at the end. And I was thinking, is that kind of the message? Is it a message of, you know, we all work together, we'll all be fine? Or was it just dumb luck? I don't know what the film was trying to say.
The character, the sheriff,
yeah,
was supposedly had this racism ingrained into him from birth.
Mm.
That's not necessarily something people just get over within 3 hours.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, being locked in a cabin for 3 hours doesn't necessarily change your racial views. Although apparently going to prison and sharing a cell with a black fella does. We've all seen American history.
Over the course of 4 years, not 3 hours.
So you're saying the sheriff, in your opinion, was the highlight, the best performance?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd agree with that. I
thought Samuel L. Jackson was a close second.
Oh, he's brilliant.
I absolutely loved him in this. And
Sam Jackson's amazing.
So much screen time. Considering there's eight characters, he was probably 60% of the film.
He got top billing. He's been in seven of Tarantino's eight films, and it's the first time where he was the first name on the screen. It's the first top billing he's had.
And that's great.
Yeah, it's an ensemble piece, but he's effectively the lead actor in it, and he is brilliant in it.
Yeah, can't take that away.
He's absolutely fantastic. And the scenes where, when he's doing the investigation, he's talking about the three guys, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen and who plays Bob?
Demian Bichir.
Yeah. Up against the wall, line them up with the guns, and he's going through sort of what's happened at the haberdashery before. It's fantastic. He just captivates you so much when he's sort of talking through and he's making all these deductions, and when he pulls up the blankets off the chair and they see the blood on the chair, and then he just shoots Bob down.
Yeah.
Guns him.
The scene I like with him is the one where he ends up killing the Confederate general, because he was going to shoot him, and then Tim Roth's character, who at that point we believe to be the hangman, even though it turns out he's not, he's a criminal, he kind of says, you know, you can't do that because you can't just kill someone in cold blood. Yeah. So Samuel L. Jackson purposefully goads him. Jackson puts his gun next to the Confederate and tells this tale about how the Confederate's son came looking for Jackson for his bounty. And Jackson not only made him march in the snow for 3 hours, he made him suck his dick in the snow for warmth.
Yes.
And then murdered him.
And goes into great detail about how warm his mouth was.
How many times did he say either Big Black Dick, Big Black Johnson, or Big Black Dingus?
Yes. That scene was pretty long. Again, it only needed to be a minute, and we had 10 minutes about his dick in his... Yeah. Throat.
It was pretty long. and then obviously the guy responds pulls the gun and Jackson puts him down, and then he just casually sits in the chair and sort of smirks. That was the best scene for me that he did.
I loved all the deaths. That's the one thing I did love. I loved the way it was filmed and the blood. It was a bit over the top, but I loved it, and that's what he does.
Yeah.
I think that was the key thing for me. I enjoyed certain aspects of the shootouts and things, but some of it was a bit too.
It's just getting to the payoff, wasn't it? Getting to that first death, like probably 2 hours in.
But even then, I felt like some of the deaths were over the top. There's one who we haven't even spoke about, Channing Tatum yet.
Yeah,
when he blows his head off.
Yeah.
And that was literally like something from like Bad Taste or something.
Yeah, same when he kills the Mexican. He puts two guns at the Mexican, and his head just explodes. Just
like a watermelon.
Like a watermelon of unnecessary gore. And I was watching it thinking, this is over the top. And then I started thinking about, I watched Django not so long ago. It was the same in that.
Yeah.
Like the squibs that they use, blood squibs, are like water balloons full of blood just exploding. And obviously it's a conscious decision of Tarantino's. Yeah. And I don't know if it's, you know, all of his career he's been accused of over the top violence and over the top gore. But it's only been his last couple of films where it's had that sort of explosive blood. And I kind of think that's on purpose to say, okay, you're going to claim that my shit's over the top.
I'll give you over the top.
Yeah. Yeah, and it works.
Yeah,
but it, at times, like you said, Adam, it's a bit jokey.
Yeah,
and for the thing that gets me is, for a 3 hour film, Channing Tatum's in it for about 20 minutes.
I really liked him in it. I will say,
being quite an integral character in what his in the plot device of what he's there for.
Yeah,
he's the whole reason behind why these people are in the cabin and why they're trying to rescue the woman.
Yeah,
he's in it for about 30 minutes of that.
And what do we think about the prisoner, the woman, as you say, Jennifer Jason Leigh, as, what was it, Daisy Domingue or whatever her name is?
She took one hell of a beating throughout that film.
Yeah.
From the moment it starts, which is
getting
her.
I really thought she did.
Yeah, yeah, really good. Yeah. And I'm hoping we see a lot more of her.
The thing is, she's not a young actress.
No.
Jennifer Jason Leigh's in her mid-40s, I think.
Yeah.
She's been around the game for a while. She's had a great year. She also does one of the voices in Annalisa, which comes out next year. Not seen it yet, obviously.
This year.
This year, of course. you know, she's having a great... Not a great year then, a great end of 1 year, start of a new year. That's the thing that annoys me about this film. Because I didn't like it, didn't really enjoy it, thought it was too talky, too static, but there is a lot to love, especially the acting.
Yeah, almost everyone's performance is nailed on.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Like, Tim Roth was a good bit of fun, but to me, he was just Christoph Waltz light. He was just, you know, we wanted an Englishman rather than a German, so let's get Tim Roth rather than Christoph Waltz, because it was the same kind of character that he would have played, I think.
I kept imagining that he would be turning up at some point, because I just couldn't adjust to the fact he wasn't in it. And I was like, is he going to be like this hidden person we didn't know about?
I do wonder whether Waltz was going to be that part.
I think he was, but he was like, I'm doing Spectre, mate.
No, I heard originally, I think, I don't know if it was what Tarantino had in mind when he wrote it, but he certainly approached him to be Snake Plissken's part. What's his name? Kurt Russell.
It was
supposed to be him.
Okay.
Which I don't think necessarily would have worked.
No, because he doesn't have the physical presence.
Yeah. Kurt Russell's a big imposing fella, and he's, you know, rowdy and, you know, rough. And I don't think, you know, Waltz is like nasty, but in a different kind of way.
Yeah. And we've spoken earlier about great mustaches in film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's second in this.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
What a tash.
Hell of a tash.
Him and Burt Reynolds. We need a third. If we can get another one on this episode.
That's our top three tashes in
that'll be it. Well, two topics on this episode. You know what I mean? But yeah, a mate. I love him in everything he's ever done. Mm-hmm. He's one. He's made my top actors list.
He was in your top actors list, wasn't he? And
I think he is actually.
How good
was
he in this, though? He was.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
Tarantino gets a performance out of everyone. He's a bit like Scorsese. He can get the best performance out of any actor. And in this, he took it to a...
This is one of the most annoying things, though. There is a lot to like about this film.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of ruined.
The score was amazing.
The score was great.
Unbelievable.
The opening scene where you just see the stagecoach coming across the snow and this sort of statue of Jesus. And I think I timed it at something like 6 minutes long, this opening scene. And it's just a slow pullout from this statue of Jesus covered in snow. And Ennio Morricone's score just on the top of this is brilliant. I want to go out and buy that.
Yep.
Yeah. It's so good. Just listen to it.
Yeah.
I'm still laughing at you saying slow pullout. But yeah, it was a really, really good score. And you know, I'll be buying this because it's the guy that did The Thing, but it worked throughout the whole film. Yeah. It really, when I read about it, like, he's using The Thing. That's completely different. That's not going to work, but it did. Mm-hmm. The cinematography, it was amazing. Yeah. It was filmed brilliantly.
Yeah, but only the bits when they were outside.
Yeah.
Which is six, seven minutes of the film.
I was about to make the exact same point. Yeah.
All the shit that takes place in the cabin, what cinematography do you need?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do with it. It's basically a set you've built and there you go.
Could have done it on an iPhone.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is a lot to like about the film.
There's also a lot to dislike.
But there's a lot to dislike.
Shall we score it?
It's not going to be a Hateful Eight.
No.
That's a shame, isn't it?
I'm going to go... Six, and I'll probably watch it again when it comes out on Blu-ray and think, oh, perhaps I scored it a bit too low because it might be one that you watch again and again. But I don't think I've got the time to watch it again. I could go on holiday and back by the time that finishes. So, six.
Same for me. It's a six. I was kind of teetering between a six and a seven because the good is good, but the bad is bad. And now that we've spoken about it, which always helps to clarify your thoughts, it's a six.
Yeah, I'll join you on a six. I think I always get very conscious when I'm rating these. I think, what did I give Turtles? I don't want to put any Tarantino film on the level with Turtles, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be here. Yeah. But I'll go with six as well. I think, like you've already said, the good is good, but the bad is bad. Yeah.
Bearing in mind, I gave Pixels a six.
Okay, this is a nine.
So, Hateful Eight, the new film from Quentin Tarantino, 6 out of 10.
Competition time. Doesn't have the same ring to it, but hey, this is the first giveaway for 2016, and it's probably the best prize we've ever given away. Forget the Apple Watch or the holiday to the Maldives. It was fully, you know, all-inclusive.
That was a good one.
We've given the chance to win a one-off printed, skip the end in the style of Star Wars font t-shirt, and the question couldn't have been easier. What was the name of the little green fella in Star Wars? That was it. We've had hundreds and hundreds of people, but there's only one winner, Scott Higgins. Well done. Say Yoda. Mm-hmm. And that's the one we're getting at.
What is it?
It is. Yeah, just in case you didn't know that. But I've also got us a brand new competition to launch the new year. Our friends at Warner Brothers.
Oh.
Our new friends at Warner Brothers have given us a Creed bundle, which consists of a hoodie, a jump rope. So, you know, if you've eaten too much at Christmas, good chance to burn some of that off. A beanie. And, you know, the Rocky hat that Rocky wears, one of them.
Like a little pork pie.
Yeah, yeah. They're cool. Now, Creed features an Oscar-nominated actor who's doing the iconic role of Rocky. All you need to do is let us know of the name of the actor that does that.
You make these questions too hard.
I know, that's tough. If you get on our Twitter or...
Oh, what's his name?
You're not allowed to enter.
Oh, okay. Can't remember his name anyway.
Go on Facebook, go on Twitter, go on skiptheend.co.uk and we'll reveal the answer in 2 weeks' time. And good luck to everyone.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
It's time to discuss our favourite films of 2015. Now, just want to announce the rules of this. Our regular listeners know that we do skip back in time each episode where we talk about the best film of a particular year, and we always go by the IMDb official date. When we do our top films of this given year, we go by UK release date. I know it sounds annoying, we use two different rules, but yeah, deal with it. So, what are your favourite films of this calendar, or last, I should say, calendar year, UK release date? I'm going to go first. We're not going to do this in a round-robin style like we usually do. I'm going to name my top five in order, and then I'll go around the room and let you boys do yours. So, are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
Top five films, then. Number five, Ant-Man.
Nice.
Big surprise for me. Didn't expect it to be anywhere near as good as it was. Bloody loved it. Number four for me, Steve Jobs. I thought it was one of the best written films I've seen in a long time. Not surprising, it's Aaron Sorkin. That's what he does. Loved it. Number three, Star Wars The Force Awakens. I'd written my top five list prior to going to see Star Wars. It was in like a bullet. I couldn't leave it out. Loved it. Number two, and this goes in with what I was saying about the calendar year rule, Whiplash. Technically a 2014 film if you go by the IMDb release date, but it came out in England in January of last year. So Whiplash is number two. My number one, the single best film I saw last year by a country mile, Sicario.
Wow.
Absolutely brilliant. A phenomenal, perfect film. Mark, you and I went to see it at the cinema twice.
In about 3 days.
In 3 days, yeah. Loved it. Brilliant. There's my five. Mark.
Wow. So I made my top five, and then last week I watched a film at home because it was Christmas period, and it made my top five and took out Ant-Man, Ex Machina.
Great film.
I absolutely loved it, and Oscar Isaac is slowly becoming one of my top five actors. I absolutely love him. Number four for me, Mad Max. Filmmaking at its best. Not the best overall film for story, but my God, visually incredible, and editing, the best thing I've seen this year. Number three, Sicario. Can't agree more on how good it is. Please go and see it if you've not. Number two.
Yeah, Adam.
I'm just laughing at can't agree more how good it was at three.
Yeah. Number two, Whiplash. Yeah. On the edge of my seat the whole time. And number one for me, The Force Awakens. Ooh. Just for the fact of it was an event. It was a talked about thing that was more than just a film. It was everything, and it delivered.
Yeah. Adam.
Yeah, so number five, I've got Ant-Man.
Nice.
Similar to yourself. Number four, I've got Everest.
Oh, yeah. Lovely.
Great film. Great movie.
Brilliantly, visually brilliant.
Yeah.
Harrowing story. Fantastic acting. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Three, Star Wars. Similar to yourself there. Number two, I've got Mad Max.
Nice.
Visually, again, incredible.
Yeah.
And number one, Whiplash.
Wow.
From last year. I haven't seen a film this year that I've enjoyed more than Whiplash.
Yeah.
The story, acting performances, all brilliant.
We've all had that in our five. In fact, I think, is it only Whiplash and Star Wars we've all got in our five? I think otherwise we've all got different choices. But I think it's safe to say it's been a good year. Yeah. It was a damn good year for film.
It's been bloody great.
So many good films. Like Mad Max you both got, haven't you?
Yeah.
That missed the cut fractionally for me.
Quite a few films did for me as well. Like, there's a few things I wanted to put in there, but you just got Steve Jobs. I wanted to have that in there, but just got edged out. I think I went for a bit of enjoyment factor as well. You know, like Mad Max was just so enjoyable to watch that it had to be in the top five.
Mad Max was in my five until I saw Star Wars, which jumped in at number three, pushing everything down a notch.
Oh, of course,
so it just dropped out.
So yeah, Ex Machina.
Oh,
I was blown away, but there's such a bloody well good modern day sci-fi.
A bloody well
bloody
good.
Was.
Yeah.
And I was just so blown away. It could have gone a bit deeper. I don't think at times it really could. It was kind of touching base, and I was like, oh, this could have had a bit more to it. It was a bit, I don't know, it played a bit safe.
Yeah.
But I absolutely loved it. And Oscar Isaac, for this year alone, that, Star Wars, what was the other one? He was the Most Violent Year. Which I thought was great. So he's had a sensational year, and I just loved it.
Do you know what? That film, actually, the three lead actors in that film have all had massive years. The woman who plays the sort of the robot, Alicia Vikander, she was also in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
Really good in that. She's also in The Danish Girl, which I've not seen yet, but by all accounts, she's very good. And, you know, people are saying she's going to get nominated for a Best Supporting Actress for that. She's had a cracking year. And then Donald Gleeson, the guy in it. He's also, you know, Hooks in Star Wars. He's in Brooklyn as well. So they've all had like massive years, those three. You know, more power to them.
And Oscar Isaac looks set to continue next year with, he's obviously Apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Quite a, not exactly a small role.
No.
I think in episode 8, it'll be a huge role as well.
I think it will as well, yeah. I think they'll write a big part for him in that.
Mm-hmm. With all good, there comes bad. What's your worst film of the year?
This is the easiest decision I ever made.
Ditto. Yeah.
Right. Do you want me to go first?
Go on then.
Jupiter Ascending. It was an abortion of a film. And I said it right this time. Instead of Juniper.
Juniper Ascending.
But yeah, it was shoddy. It was a lot of money spent on this film. The acting was terrible. The dialogue was terrible. The special effects looked awful. And I don't know. Yeah. What was with all the makeup? And his hair.
He was part dog. Channing Tatum was half dog. That was his character.
It was just dreadful.
That's all you need to say. Yeah. All you need to say is Channing Tatum was half dog.
Mm-hmm. Done. I'm sorry. I can't take that film seriously. And it was just a bag of shit.
One of the things you mentioned was the CGI and whatnot. Atrocious.
Really
absolutely
bad.
Atrocious.
It looked like it'd been done on an Atari. Now, it was that bad.
I've not seen the film because I got half an hour in and turned it off.
Yeah, good.
Right. I literally couldn't sit through any more of it.
Yeah. Shocking. Awful.
What was yours then, Ben?
Anyone who has listened to all of our shows over the past year should know this is my most hated film. 50 Shades of Grey. Good God almighty, what a piece of shit that was. From a terrible book written by an absolute cretin.
Yeah.
Enjoyed by nobody, but made a hell of a lot of money. Awful. It's an abomination, it's an abortion, it's atrocious, it's disgusting.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's so... The thing is, like, the story is awful, which is one thing. You can't really get over that. But everything about it, you can kind of forgive that if it was well made. It's not. It's badly directed. The acting is shite. Everything about it made my skin crawl and my blood boil. It infuriates me still. It should never have been made. And the sequel, the fact there's going to be a sequel...
There'll be many sequels. Good
God almighty. Worst film ever.
But I did have a lot of fun reviewing it with you guys. I did. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we eviscerated that. For those of you who haven't heard it, go back and listen to that episode. We laid into it a tad.
I am in full agreement.
Yeah, I thought you might be.
Yeah, it's the worst film I've seen this year. To be honest, there was only one other film that came close, and it was Fantastic Four.
I know you're going
to
say that as well. Yeah.
But this just, it was head and shoulders above everything else. Mm-hmm. 50 Shades of Grey, single-handedly the worst film I've seen. I would like to say the worst film I've seen this year. But we also watched Battlefield Earth
for
the first time this year. So, amazingly, it's not the worst film I've seen in total, but by release date, it's the worst film of 2015.
I know, you've mentioned Fantastic Four there, and that is also my second worst film of the year. Now, I think, Mark, you've bought it on Blu-ray, haven't you?
No. I watched it with my friend who bought it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, right, whatever.
Steelbook.
You've got the Steelbook.
Friend.
And I've heard, Adam, I've heard that Mark may have changed his opinion on this.
Yeah, I was worried that Adam was going to pick it as his worst film. Yeah. And then I would have said, I can't agree. Because for some reason, Rich, who came on the podcast last time, afterwards said, I really want to see Fantastic Four. I said, mate, don't waste your time. It's the biggest pile of shit you're ever going to see. We put it on. And he was like, at the end, he was like, what was so bad about it? And I was like, that was actually quite good at home on the TV. I don't know if they've re-edited it.
No. Just quickly. So your friend bought Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And then said to you, I really want to watch it.
Yeah.
So he'd already bought it and said to you, I really want to watch it.
Yeah, and I said, I'll watch it with you.
That's a bit weird. Are you sure you didn't buy it?
I swear
and he saw it at your house.
I swear I've not. It was enjoyable.
See, a lot of times I will say, you know, if you want to know about this, that and the other, go back and listen to our old episode. I say that to the listener. I'm now going to address this to Mark. Go back and listen to your own review and then you will know what's wrong with it. The fact there isn't a third act.
It was all right. I can't believe it.
There is no denouement to the film.
Middle. I couldn't have nothing.
It was all right. It's weird. I enjoyed it. Perhaps I was hungover.
I'll borrow your copy, which you definitely own, Mark, and then I'll rewatch it and see what I think.
I never lend my steelbooks out.
Maybe they've added a third act onto the
movie. It's a DVD extra, the end of the film.
I thought it'd be good to ask the guys out there on social media what their worst film was, because there was a lot of bad films as well. There's a lot of good, but there was a lot of bad.
Yeah.
So Sarah Grace has said Seventh Son, one of Jeff Bridges' worst ever things.
Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore. Shame.
What were they doing?
She was an Oscar winner this year.
Yeah.
Ian Evans has put Terminator Salvation and Fantastic Four. I mean, Terminator Salvation, I didn't think was that bad.
It wasn't even out this year, man.
Yeah.
Genesis. Oh, yeah, good point.
Not the life space, Salvation. I'm really not with it, yeah. There's my mispronunciation.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Terminator Salvation was pretty bad. But
it was so bad that it's the worst film of a year it didn't come out.
It carries over, and just carries over. Well done. Macca has said Focus.
I've not seen that. That's the Will Smith one.
Oh, yeah,
it's supposed
Margot
to be
Robbie.
Awful.
Oh.
Ben Davis, the remake of Poltergeist, a pile of wank.
If you remember, famously, we refused to review it.
We were going to review it, and Mark simply said no. He vetoed it, quite rightly.
Andre Jenkin, Absolutely Anything, with Simon Pegg. And I've not seen it.
I've not seen it. That's the one that's got the voices of the pythons in, isn't it?
And
yeah,
I've not seen it either.
I want to kind of see it, but nah. Lawrence Doherty and Robert Mulcahy have both said Ridiculous Six.
Yeah.
They've put it's projectile toilet humour involving a donkey is supposed to be funny. It's not. It's shit.
It's literally shit. The donkey shits itself loads of times. That's what he means by the projectile humour. It just has diarrhoea over the wall about four times.
I can't believe you watched it.
It's god-awful. Then again, you know, Ridiculous Six, not that much worse than Hateful Eight. That's the dirty secret.
I think it is.
Couple more. Steve Toogood has said Tomorrowland.
Tomorrow Bland.
Someone else has said that as well. Adam Richin, and he put, spoiler, if you think positivity can change the world, it's bullshit. It's horrendous.
Mm.
Did you see it?
I did.
Boring.
Rubbish.
Nothing happens.
Yeah, nothing happens.
Yeah. George Clooney just took the paycheck and thought, I'll do that.
Yeah. The main girl in it, I think she's great, and I think she's got a big career coming, but the film is shite.
So yeah, that was our top five of the year.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, see you again next year.
I hate this bit. Absolutely despise this. Why do we have to keep doing this?
Skip
back in time.
It's your
What's the point?
You we love
all
it.
No, it is.
What is the point of this? It's ridiculous. We all have to go back and we have to look at different years. This time it's 1994.
Yeah.
And we have to talk about films from that. What's the point?
As if there was anything good in
it. We're like clinging on to our youth.
New is always better. What new films are always better than old films.
Big time. That's true, actually.
The prequels of Star Wars are better than the originals.
Yeah.
So that's just
Fantastic Four is the best film ever made.
Well, according to Mark, it is now.
It is.
Thanks for that. It's like a video game. Thanks for that paid DLC of the third act. Yeah. But no, skip back in time. We all enjoy talking about old films. It's 1994 this time around.
Yeah.
This was a very good year.
It really is.
It's a really good year.
Yeah, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, Forrest Gump. The Lion King, two of Ben's favourite films of all time.
Jog on.
So I think I know what Ben's going to have chosen. I think we all know what Ben's going to have chosen. Let's throw it to him first. Come on. You can now masturbate over Tarantino for a bit.
Yeah, I'm not even going to F and F about it. It's Pulp Fiction. Of course it's bloody Pulp Fiction. Best film of 1994. Best film of the 90s, quite possibly. One of the single best films ever made. It's a work of art. It's brilliant. Why is he doing Hateful Eight?
He has gone downhill from that film.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like we're writing him off.
No, yeah.
He's done.
He's gone.
Yeah.
He's a hack.
He's only on the film 8.
He's not Kevin Smith. But Pulp Fiction is a wonderful, wonderful film. The acting is sublime. The writing between him and Roger Avery is genius. It's directed beautifully. It brought a lot of actors back to the forefront. We've already discussed John Travolta, but Bruce Willis as well was in, not necessarily a slump, but he kind of leveled off. He was doing the same shit, and then he came and did this film, and it was different, and he's great in it. Sam Jackson, it was the film that made him. He was already working steadily prior to that, but this is the film that made him. You know, Jules Winfield, the whole
Path of the Righteous Man
speech is as good as it gets in terms of film monologues. I don't like to use the word perfect, other than about myself or or Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, but it's a perfect film. Everything about it.
Christopher Walken. Amazing.
The watch. My ass.
The performances. Everything. Yeah. The soundtrack.
In fact, you know what? I said it's perfect, but I'm going to give it a -1. I'm bringing it down to a 9. I'll tell you for why. Because of Harvey Keitel as Winston Wolfe. Great, great performance. The fact that he's now doing adverts in character for some fucking insurance company, pardon my French, winds me the F up.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm sure, I don't know this, but I'm guessing, I'm sure that Tarantino must own the rights to that character. So the fact that he's using Winston Wolfe in a car insurance ad, Tarantino must have sold that ad to that company. He must have allowed it to happen.
Unless they're just using it and Tarantino doesn't know because he's never seen that advert.
Yeah, maybe he's naming the advert is like Binston Bulf or something. It's ever so slightly different. That is the one knock on it for me, but otherwise it's a perfect film.
So retroactively it's downgraded.
Yeah.
He's an Del Niro. That's how he's got around it.
Del Niro, yeah.
Roberto Del Niro.
Wow. No one's going to disagree. You know, Pulp Fiction's a master. It's a masterpiece.
It is. Yeah.
And I'm saying that. You know, I don't use that word willy-nilly.
Well, not about films from the 90s. Films from the 80s, you do.
And now, you know, let's move on to Mark, because I think he's another obvious choice for 1994.
He's going
to
say Clerks and he or some shit.
Leon.
Excellent choice.
You know how much I love Leon.
Big time.
Clerks is a masterpiece as well, and it's very, very well made.
Out of your mind.
But Leon is all about the performance, the lead role, but also, let's go with supporting actor, actress.
Yeah.
Very young age. Let's be honest about it. We were blown away. We did this, was it homework back in the day?
You've forgotten her name, haven't you? Because you've not said it yet.
Natalie Portman.
Thank you so much. That's why I was kind of like, oh, come on, come on. I don't want to have to get on IMDb. Natalie Portman. Outstanding. But you did this as homework.
I did, and it blew me away. Loved it.
Listeners that haven't listened to our old episodes, get on it. But we used to have basically some real honest moments of admitting that we hadn't seen these classic films.
Yeah.
And those moments that Ben went to watch Jaws.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Which is, in 30-odd years of existence, never seen Jaws until a few months back, and it's now edging on my top five.
Yeah,
it's
for me,
just
like,
knocking on the door.
I think it was The Graduate, stuff like that. There's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, there's
that was one of Adam's.
A lot of good films.
Yeah.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
But,
I got to see that.
Crazy.
Phenomenal.
But
Indiana Jones, I've never seen any of that when that was homework.
And Ben had the homework of Leon and loved it, which was a moment I knew he was as good as I thought he was.
Cheers,
but
cheers, bro.
It was, what a film. The ending is amazing. If you haven't seen it, It's a very, very good ending. Just watch it. But I can't say anything else about this film. Try and see the extended cut if you can. It's got another 37 minutes, I think, in America. So go on holiday and buy the DVD there.
Gary,
you know.
Yeah, go on holiday. Pay £600 for a flight to New York rather than just buying it on Amazon for $12.99.
Other internet shopping.
Or buy the Blu-ray now, which is uncut.
Available.
For $5.99 on Savvy.
Are you getting these weird new Blu-rays from other websites? These that make Fantastic Four good.
But yeah, it's not Clerks, so I surprised you.
Good. Adam.
So mine was a really difficult choice, actually. I actually watched both of these, the two films I was looking at and really wanted to choose. I ended up watching both of them over the Christmas New Year period just to make sure I was choosing the right one. And I love Shawshank Redemption a bit, but unfortunately it's missed out.
Mm-hmm.
Natural Born Killers.
Ah,
nice.
Unbelievable film.
Absolutely fantastic. And we spoke about, obviously, Robert Downey Jr.
Wayne Gale.
As Wayne Gale. Yeah. You know, Woody Harrelson is, Mickey and Mallory are two of the greatest characters I've ever seen conceived in a film. This film is probably one of my favourites of all time, having watched it again now. Yeah. I look back and think, if it doesn't make a top five, it definitely makes my top 10.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I love this whole story. I love the whole Stockholm syndrome that happens with Wayne Gale as he's going along with them,
uh-huh.
gets caught up, thinks he's one of them, and then, spoiler alert at the end, oh...
Yeah.
But it's full of great moments as well, and Woody Harrelson just this was a time in film where he was really kind of back in the action. Mm. Really, I think is probably the best way to describe it. He'd done things like People vs. Larry Flynt.
Yeah,
he was going and doing Natural Born, some very different, because everyone just remembered him as Woody from Cheers.
Yeah,
that was all he was, you mm-hmm. know, and he really broke out towards the sort of late start of the 90s, kind of mid 90s. And this was one of those roles that kind of did it for me. I fell in love with the guy.
He's brilliant in this. Juliette Lewis rules
Juliette
as
Lewis
Mallory.
Phenomenal.
And I always forget that Tommy Lee Jones is the warden as well. He's hilarious in that
fantastic.
Film. Really dark and really funny.
But having watched it again recently, I sat there and thought, it's only one choice. This is my top film of 1994.
It's a banner year for Tarantino, because obviously he wrote that, didn't he? So, you know, that and Pulp Fiction, that is a good year.
Imagine having that on your CV for 1 year.
It's not bad, is it? But then he ruined it with Hateful Eight. So.
Write him off again. He's done. He's done and dusted. He's a hack. It's over. Let's do the Kevin Smith test.
Oh, what? Kevin Smith was like 8 bad, 1 good, wasn't he? Tarantino is 7 good, 1 bad.
But he's got time to catch up now. So.
Kill Bill 2 as well. That's not that good.
Average.
It's not bad, though.
Average.
Yeah.
Are we going social media then?
Gerald Carney, Heart Says Shawshank, Gut Says Leon. Nice. Sarah Grace, Airheads. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
It's a great film. So good. This is a great film as well. Spencer Scott Holmes has put True Lies.
Yeah.
Good film. I love that film.
This is one that we've talked about before. I think it was a rewatch. Chris Spurlock, The Crow.
Oh, yeah.
Was that 94?
Yeah, it was 94, yeah.
Shit the bed, that is a good year.
Lynn on... Twitter, which is CH828 Forrest Gump. Sorry,
shame.
Dude.
Forrest Dump.
Anthony Lucano, The Mask.
The Mask, also yeah.
I thought that might be one that you were going to do.
That was the year of my sexual awakening. I'll tell you for why. This is when puberty kicked in for me, when Cameron Diaz walked in.
The red dress.
In that red dress.
My God.
Oh dear. Yeah. Things began to stir.
We've spoken about this before as well.
The second sexiest girl ever to wear a red dress.
Who's number one?
Think about it. Lisa!
You know it. Everybody betray me.
And finally, Mike Brown, Interview with a Vampire.
Shame.
So next week, we'll be going to 1993, and it's bloody good.
I think this year is going to take some beating, though. When you look at 94 and what was released in 94, that is a good year.
It's a banner year.
We're one step closer to the 80s.
That's all you're waiting for.
That's all I'm waiting for.
Up next, I hope you'll enjoy a skit by Pedro Sanchez.
My rewatch choice was Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
Now, I chose this because I've never been a fan of it. I've watched it once, and Mark and yourself and Rich, who was on last time, have all said to me in the past, you know, oh, it's one of those films, you've got to watch it again to see how it is. So I chose this film. I thought it'd be a nice time to do it. I don't really want to start off with this. So, Ben, what are your thoughts rewatching Napoleon Dynamite?
No way you're getting away with that. You know full well that Mark and I love it, to the point where Mark watched it directly before he got married. We've told this story a couple of times, and I'm a fan as well. You're not a fan, so I want to hear your thoughts. Having seen it again, for the first time in a long time. I don't think you've watched it for like a decade, have you?
Oh, yeah, it's about 10 years since I last watched it. A lot of my thought hasn't really changed.
Aww.
I watched it again, and
I
found it slightly more funny. And the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
But there's just long periods of it where I'm like, what the fuck is this even about?
Hey, we're not talking about The Hateful Eight.
I just don't get it.
That's the key. It's a film that you either get or you don't. I think your brain kind of needs to be tuned into that. You know, it doesn't make you better or worse for not being in tune to it. It's just you either get that humour or you don't.
Yeah. I'm
gutted.
I was sitting there watching it, and it just felt like a chore.
It's like him handing his notice, just writing it as he's going along.
Oh, I'll do that later.
That's an odd way to ask for your P45, isn't it?
P45, I'm not getting paid anything.
Oh, we are.
Did he not tell you?
Did we not get you? Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right. I've got It's Always Sunny.
That's true, fallback. Yeah.
I do this for the charity more than anything.
This film is so quirky and so original.
Yeah.
There's nothing else like it, and there hasn't been in 11 years since it came out. It does. It's so perfect in every way. The characters.
Big words.
It is. It really is. He's never ever matched the performance. John Heder,
yeah.
And his career's gone really downhill since. He did that one about ice skating.
That's a good film. I like that film with Will Ferrell.
Of course you do. Will Ferrell's in it, but yeah. But I didn't like it. And he's the director himself as well, has not done a lot. He went on and did... Oh, is it the wrestling one?
He did Nacho Libre. Dreadful. He did... oh, God, there was one with one of the guys from Flight of the Conchords he did that was shit.
There's one called Gentleman...
Gentleman Broncos, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one. Terrible, awful. Because he's the... I think his name's Jared Hess, he's the writer.
Yeah.
And then Jerusha
Hess
is his wife, and they sort of co-write things. And they're clearly one-hit wonders. Everything they've done since has been garbage.
So basically they got lucky.
Yeah.
In the fact that this has a cult following.
Yeah.
Just because people now, hipsters say it's good, so it must be good.
Oh, man. No way.
I'm going to play devil's advocate because Adam doesn't like it. Mark bums it hard. I'm going to sit on the fence. I like it. I enjoy it very much. The thing with me is that there's no story. It's a loosely connected series of vignettes. It's just skits. Now, I find all of those skits funny, so it works for me, but it's not really a film. There's no plot.
No, but there doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
I want to see him taking a jump off his bike. I want to see a guy grating cheese on his tacos, waiting for some lip balm to be brought to him at school. I want the questions of how long he spent highlighting the upper lip and eyebrows on a picture. I want him to be trying to sell Tupperware that comes with a free boat.
Do you know what bit made me laugh the hardest, I think, watching it again this weekend? It's right at the start of the film where Napoleon first gets on the school bus and he's got that little
on a string.
That little toy on a string, throws it out the window.
Why?
What's the point?
Why? Doing that? Just holding it. Whatever I want to do today, Napoleon. Amazing.
You're both mental.
I know, I can understand why you wouldn't like it, because why would you? It's ridiculous, but it either makes you laugh or it doesn't, and it does me.
Kip.
I think it's one of those things. One of the things that annoys me is there are similar films out there that I like. And I enjoy it. I do find Anchorman should never work as a film, because again, it is all about just sort of mini character skits and things that kind of happen.
Yeah, but that's a different kind of film, because that's a gag film. It's more laugh lines, whereas this isn't. This is more about the scenes and just the weirdness of it. It's not a gag film.
What do you think to Uncle Rico? Because I think he's one of the greatest characters ever. So he's stuck in the 80s, like myself. And he's always talking about this has-been kind of American football career, that he was going to be the next big thing. What about the scene when he's going past on a bike?
Napoleon? It's pointless. It's all pointless. Oh, what are you talking about?
Throws the steak in his face.
What do you bet me I can throw this ball over those mountains? And then he doesn't. He throws this steak at Napoleon's head, knocks him off the bike.
It's amazing. Absolute genius.
That bit did make me laugh.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. Come on now.
So
Kip.
I think one of the things that I really don't like is the fact that there are bits in it that I find funny.
Mm-hmm.
There are aspects of it that are funny to me. But I don't think it's as good as people tell you it is.
Okay.
Perhaps it's been built up too much that it was never going to live up to it.
To be fair, we've been saying to Adam for the best part, probably 2 years, we've been saying, you've got to watch it again, you've got to watch it again, you'll love it. You know,
you've probably been in the film's biggest advocate of the last sort of year and a half, telling me you watched it before your wedding day, and all the big moments of your life, you're going to watch this film because it's that funny to you. And, you know, it is that funny to you, and that's fair enough. I'm not going to argue with that. No. But it's just not to me.
Yeah, that is fair.
Yeah.
You're wrong, but that's fair.
I'm not wrong.
I want to talk about Kip.
One of us has actually been in films?
Sorry, Danny, you're right.
Kip is a great character. Kip is weedy older
amazing.
Brother.
Amazing.
Who still wears diapers at about 30 years old. But the fact he gets with LaFonda is brilliant. LaFonda. Absolutely brilliant.
And I love how, as soon as she turns... He wears like these little nerdy clothes. And as soon as she turns up, he starts wearing like baggy denim with
gold chain. Absolutely amazing. And his rap he does at his wedding. So good.
And another character that I love, who I always forget, because he's only in like two scenes, is the taekwondo instructor.
Rex Kwon-Do. You want to take a roundhouse to the head of these bad boys? Forget about it. Amazing.
The bit where he gets Kip to come up and do a demonstration with him, and then he just cuffs him around the head.
Grab my arm. My other arm. Forget about it.
And
he's
wearing douche pants.
The American flags. Yeah. I've tried to get them. I really need them in life. But also Pedro. The fact he gets too warm, so he shaves his head. Why?
I was really warm. And then I realised my head was making me warm. So I shaved my head.
What a great character. So good.
This is the weird thing, though. I'm actually enjoying this film more listening to you and talking about it than I did watching it.
One of my favourite scenes of the whole film is when he goes to get his Uncle Rico goes to get his photo done for his like modelling shop to make his passes look more believable for his company.
Yeah,
and she's like, put your hand under your chin.
Just slowly raise the hand. Think about under the chin.
What she's like, think about the birds on an ocean just flying out, and she only takes one picture and goes, that's the one. That felt really good, Deb. Thanks, that felt really good. It's so ridiculous. And then there's Pedro going, do you think I could wear this? And he's like picked up the most ridiculous suit. But then when he goes and buys the suit, the brown suit, that is amazing.
That is pimping.
And Pedro's cousins as well.
I love the bit where Napoleon is saying to the guy, you know, vote for Pedro, here's your button. You're under Pedro's protection now. And then that lad... Some guy's trying to nick his bike, and then the two cousins in the lowrider turn up.
So good. So good.
It is very good.
But the quirkiness, like I said, there's little things that when you watch it 962 times, you start to notice. And the amount of cheese he's grating on his food it's insane.
Everest of cheese.
And the fact that the telephone cable between the phone and the handset, for some reason, is about a mile long, so you can walk around the whole house with it.
There's a bit where he's on the phone outside.
Yeah. Like, why have you got that? I don't understand. And why are you getting paid $1 an hour to go and work on a chicken farm where they serve chickens and eggs, and the drink is just... You know, drink up, boys. There's, and there's flies all over it. And he's like, I don't know what he says. He looks over to see something and he just, the farmer goes like, yep, and you don't know what the hell he says, but it's just ridiculous.
I can't find my checkbook, so I'm going to pay you in change.
That's like $1 an hour.
$1 an hour.
Amazing.
It's ridiculous.
I love it. And the soundtrack is brilliant as well. It's really cheesy, kind of like Blackpool that keyboard. Organ.
Yeah,
organ.
The cheap, so good. brilliant.
So, Adam, you didn't love it.
No, not a big fan.
Do you want to score it? Because all we're going to do is quote the whole
exactly.
film.
Exactly. Me and Mark are now doing what me and you do, Adam, when we talk about Anchorman.
Yeah,
we're just quoting shit.
And I'm the same with Anchorman. It's a bit, it's wank, so... It is. I don't like Anchorman.
That is ridiculous.
I'm sorry. It is. I just don't get it. And hipsters walk around.
He's lashing out just because you said he didn't like this. He's lashing out.
One all.
That's it now.
Cheap. Cheap attack.
So let's score Napoleon.
Yeah, Napoleon.
It all rides on you. So Adam, go for it.
4.
Fuck off.
Oh, that's awful. Oh, man.
Rate it now as a film.
I'll be brutally honest, I was going to give it a 7. I was going to say it's a solid 7, but I've done that whole thing of when you talk about it with friends, you like it more. I'm giving it, it's an 8 for me now. In a half an hour's time when I've calmed down, it won't be an 8, but I'm giving it an 8 because it's good fun.
Just because I give it a 4, basically. Yeah,
and the maths are easier. It's easier if you just use.
Yeah, you're not allowed even numbers here. I'm going for 10.
It's I am.
It's my favourite comedy. I got married to this film. I'll have kids to this film. I'll die to this film.
You'll have kids to this film.
Yes. And my kid's going to be called Kip.
I'll have fun if you ever go.
And you can be Uncle Ben.
Big time. No, he sells rice. And then I'm going to be Uncle Rico.
Okay. You're Uncle Rico.
He sells rice. It's my favourite thing he's ever said.
So 10 and 8 and 4
it's
22.
It's 22. I don't know what it's like divided
it's
by.
It's about
three.
7.
Yeah.
Just over.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. About 7.
That'll do.
So Napoleon Dynamite gets 7 out of 10. Ben, Uncle Ben, what's your choice?
Now, we talked about homework earlier where we had like Leon and things. Yeah. We kind of forced each other to watch films and we abandoned that for whatever reason. I'm kind of bringing it back, but still as the rewatch. So I just want to pick a film now that I want you to watch. It's not a classic by any means. And it makes sense in context of Napoleon Dynamite, which is kind of Marmite. This is the definition of a Marmite film. It's a documentary about the story of Marmite. That's not true.
It's a documentary. I was like, is it Game Report Part 2?
Have you guys, either of you, heard of an American comedy duo called Tim and Eric?
No.
This is going to be amazing. Tim and Eric are an American comedy duo, and they deal in surrealism. They're the surrealist, weirdest mama jammers you will ever see. I don't think their show was ever on in the UK, but you can watch it all legally on YouTube. So go and watch Tim and Eric, and their shit is out there. If you think like things like Mighty Boosh or Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer that is surreal, this shit is a whole other level. This is in the stratosphere. So they did this show called Tim and Eric Awesome Show, Great Job, which is a brilliantly insane, surreal show. They then were able to do a movie called Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. And it's the weirdest goddamn thing I've ever seen. I love it. I think it is a work of twisted genius. I know people who've watched it and said, what the frig did I just watch? This is an abomination. So I'm only making you watch it purely because I need to see your reactions. I need to know what you think.
Okay,
to
cool.
Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie.
Okay.
I'm really hoping. I'm hoping one of you will hate it. Adam, probably you. You're going to go, why have you made me watch this? And I'm hoping Mark loves it.
And buys it on Spielberg.
Yeah, because then you'll go on YouTube and watch all their shows as well. I'm really intrigued to see how
I'm a big
goes.
Fan of Marty Boosh, big fan of Bick and Bob.
Yeah.
It's also the fact honestly, I've never heard of it.
There's surreal and then there's fucking just whacked.
I'm a big fan of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Yeah, that's a great show. Great show. Yeah.
Is it as dark as stuff like Jam and Brass Eye? In a weird way.
There's a certain point in the film that I want to tell you to prove how dark it is, but if I do, it would ruin it because you need to just
we'll discuss
see
we'll watch
it
and we'll discuss it next time.
All I'm going to say... Anyone who's seen it, all I'm going to say is shrimp.
Okay.
You'll know what I mean when we come back in 2 weeks' time. Shrimp.
Shrimp to the end.
Yeah.
as I told you last week on the show, I've come up with an idea for a new game show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't give too much away. I'm calling it Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
Now, me and my brother, who you both know quite well, John, we were talking once about how film titles, often when translated and then translated back, become quite funny.
Yeah.
To give you an example of this, and this made us literally laugh out loud when we found out. In China, The Sixth Sense had a name, and when translated back to English, it was He's a Ghost.
Spoiler alert.
That's amazing.
So I thought, what a great idea for a game show is if I found 10 movie titles,
yeah,
translated back to English and pitched them to you, can you guess what the film is?
Holy
shit.
This
is genius.
This is brilliant.
So it's just the idea that some of them are absolutely fantastic.
He's a
I'm going to tell you now.
So good.
I'd be very surprised if you get some of them because they're nowhere close.
Shit, so how's it going to work? Are we getting 5 each?
Yeah, 5 each. Mm-hmm. And I've got a tiebreaker one as well.
Lovely stuff.
Which you can just shout out, obviously, if it gets to that.
Yeah.
So who wants to go first? Who wants the first question?
Oh, I'll throw it to Mark.
Okay. So Mark, your first movie translated title is Six Naked Pigs.
Six Naked Pigs.
What is that in our own?
Yeah.
Don't help him.
I'm going to pass.
The Full Monty.
Oh, man. We're not going to get any.
Ben.
Yeah.
Your movie title is...
Oh, God.
If You Leave Me, I Delete You.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Correct.
Oh.
I only got that because I watched that film for the first time 2 days ago.
Amazing.
Cheat. He knew.
So that's 1-0 after round one of questions.
You definitely had an easier one there.
Mark, yours is... I'm drunk and you're a prostitute.
I'm drunk and you're a prostitute.
Yeah, what film is that?
Pretty Woman.
Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh, no, to go 2-0 up, Ben.
Oh, God.
Ben, yeah. Yours is Vaseline.
Oh, shit. I don't know. Shawshank Redemption.
Grease. Still 1-0 after round two.
Oh, man.
Mark.
Yes.
Yours is, The Hitman is not as cold as he thought.
Oh, man.
The Hitman is not as cold as he thought.
Hitman 47.
It's Leon, the professional.
Oh, you should have known that.
Shocking.
So, Ben, to go 2-0 up.
Yeah.
The Young People Who Traverse Dimensions While Wearing Sunglasses. The Young People Who Traverse Dimensions Whilst Wearing Sunglasses.
Bill and Ted?
I know that. Is it The Matrix?
It is The Matrix.
Oh, shit.
Bill and Ted.
Still 1-0.
Yep.
Mark.
Yep.
Mysterious Murder in Snowy Cream.
Fargo.
It is Fargo.
Can we just play this for an hour and a half each week? Forget the reviews and the rewatches.
That's 1-1. So, Ben, you've got you got one in hand now. So,
yeah.
Dimwit Surges Forth.
Forrest Gump.
The Waterboy.
Ah, shit.
I hate that film.
It's a good film, all right.
Last one, innit?
Last round. So, it's 1-1.
Oh, could I win a game?
Mark, yours is Big Liar.
Liar, Liar?
Unfortunately not. It's the film Nixon.
Oh, ooh, political.
Ben,
yeah.
To win it.
Mm-hmm.
Yours is Captain Supermarket.
Obviously, come on.
Captain Supermarket. I've no idea.
Army of Darkness.
That's what he works in a supermarket. Yeah. Oh, shit. Oh.
So it's a tiebreaker.
So it's a tiebreaker.
Oh, so we've got a shout out, have we?
We do. We do.
Oh, God, here we go.
So the tiebreaker is. The Teeth from the Sea.
Jaws.
Correct.
Oh.
Yeah, baby!
Ben wins.
Woo! So can I, as a loser, be the host next week?
You can.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's a lovely game show. I hope fun was had by all.
Super.
Stay tuned for next week. First listener questions of 2016, and there's a good bunch. So, Ben Mullings, with The Disaster Artist on the way, do you think we'll get a DVD release of The Room, and do you think it's going to kind of bring it to everyone's attention?
I think it's going to massively increase eyes on The Room.
Oh, hugely, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's obviously a passion project for James Franco as well. He's, you know, he clearly wants to do this, and the idea that I think it's going to bring a lot of attention to the book for Greg Sestero as well. I think a lot of attention is going to be put on everyone who was in that film.
My worry is this: have you ever seen a film directed by James Franco?
No
one has. And he's directed about six. He releases a film every 3 months that he's directed, and no one sees them. So that's my worry about this, that it's, people are hyping it now, where we look on Twitter and read it, but it's not even going to be released in any cinemas, no one's going to see it. That's what I'm worried about. I want it. It's not going to be a blockbuster. It's not going to beat Star Wars.
Well, it would be good.
It would be good.
You never know.
If we go and see it 400 times a day.
Star Wars doesn't have skip to the end behind it, you know, plugging that media machine.
That's true, yeah.
I think it's going to make a lot of people start kind of, hopefully not ridiculing, but taking the mick out of Tommy Wiseau and really joking about him. And I hope it doesn't make him depressed.
How dare they?
Yeah, because
he's a really nice dude.
And I don't think he'll do any press or any interviews. Yeah. And our interview with him will be that kind of gold. Oh my God, they spoke to him before he killed himself.
You and if
that?
You
in the film.
And if you haven't heard that interview, yes, you can find that on www.skiptotheend.co.uk. Mm-hmm.
At Doopy. What is the ultimate comic book movie or the quintessential movie?
I don't know what quintessential means. I know what quintessential means.
Quimessential. No. Quintessential film. This is to you two. You love this.
Yeah, it's a difficult question.
I think I know what Adam's going to say. It's got to be Dark Knight from you, isn't
it? No, probably not. I mean, if you're looking quintessentially comic book, then I couldn't really look further than Sin City.
Yeah.
For the way it's kind of shot and how it's done is like perfect towards the graphic novels.
Panel to screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say Watchmen was a very good kind of adaptation as well.
Yep.
Schneider does them very well. He tends to do a lot of that stuff really well.
Speaking of Schneider, just going off topic ever so slightly, I rewatched Man of Steel this past weekend. Loved it. Look, I've seen it 3 times now, I think, and I was ambivalent towards it the first time, liked it a bit the next time. Bloody love it now.
It's a shame. I should have chose that for a rewatch once, and I'm sure that, you know, but I didn't think he'd have anything to say about it.
I still think it's terrible, but I will watch it again before the new
one. You've
seen
it once, though, haven't you?
That's it. I don't really. I'm going to go with Watchmen because I don't read a lot, but when I did, I thought that looked good.
Yeah, Watchmen and Sin City are the two big ones for me. They were the ones that adapted well.
M, who's at Memento Gory, has put a question that's been weighing on her mind. If the same jokes and dialogue from The Force Awakens were in the prequels, do you think we'd still laugh? I don't, because of the people delivering them. I don't take Ewan McGregor or that idiot Aiden that Grishes. Played. Yeah, I don't, I'm sorry. I just, even if the same writers have wrote those lines, nah.
I don't think we'd have seen. I think the writing was the issue in the prequels, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like we've said on numerous occasions, Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman are two very good actors.
Yep.
But even they couldn't do anything with what was given to them.
Yeah, you can't polish a turd.
No. That's exactly it. Rachel Bickley, what was your biggest letdown of 2015? Alton Towers.
No, Fantastic Four, probably.
Jurassic World, I was like a kid.
I'd say Fantastic Four because me and Ben had lots of conversations about how I was saying, oh, each trailer I see makes it look a lot better, actually.
Yeah, we had high hopes.
By the end of it, especially after Ant-Man, because we weren't sure about Ant-Man, and then again, the trailers made it look better and better, and we were like, oh, this is great. I had really high hopes for Fantastic Four, and obviously I was a big fan of Josh Trank for Chronicle.
Yeah.
But clearly he's not a good director.
Josh Wang.
Pete Gatt.
Pete Gass.
Gatt.
As in from the Mean Street Posse.
Mean Street Posse, no, WWE, Gatt. mid-90s.
Sorry, no. We did get some famous listeners, but not that famous.
Yeah. Pete Gass is an A-lister.
Do you think there'll ever be a cinema year without a reboot or a remake or a film that's part of a franchise?
It's never going to happen anymore.
We're doomed. If anything, it's going to be more and more.
Yeah, you're now in a situation where if something isn't working, they reboot the franchise 6 years after making a film.
Yeah, and we're now in an era where they are remaking films that are sort of 15 years old. Yeah. Was it Point Break they just remade? Yeah. Why? Total Recall, just remade, well, a few years back remade. Why?
This is one of the things, obviously, Spider-Man got a reboot within 10 years, and then it gets, now it's getting pretty much another reboot.
Yeah.
Now it's back with Marvel.
We will never again live in an era without reboots, remakes, etc.
Yeah.
Benny Buckingham, if you had to sit through a WWE studio movie, which one would you watch?
As long as it's starring Pete Gas.
Which movie would it be?
Is it The Condemned, the one where Stone Cold is on the island with Vinnie Jones? That's pretty good.
I've seen that. That's pretty good, actually. Yeah.
I've watched See No Evil 1 and 2 with Kane. They're dreadful horrors, but I'll watch them.
Isn't there a scene in it where Kane is having a wank whilst he's staring at some girl through like a peephole?
That's in the outtakes.
I've grown up watching Kane. I never wanted to see him jerking the gherkin.
It's his new finishing move.
I think if you put Pete Gas...
It's real as what you said. Anything that you want to watch, Adam?
But you know, Pete Gas or Big Show, if they're anything, I'll watch that.
Big time.
Big Show's a huge draw.
Jack Lee, what do you think will be the best and worst film of 2016's upcoming releases? Wow, that's a big one.
I don't know, I've not seen any of them.
Yeah,
based on what I've read, and this is early doors, but based on what I've read, I've heard that Room is going to be amazing, I've heard that Big Short's going to be amazing, and, you know, Revenant.
It's difficult to predict worst film because, you know, trailers often cherry-pick the best bits anyway to kind of put a up to. I think I've got high hopes for the standards, you know, Civil War, I've got high hopes for Batman vs. Superman,
Deadpool.
Of course. Deadpool.
See, that's my worry.
Yeah.
Deadpool.
I'm excited for Deadpool, but I'm not as big a Deadpool fan as Ben is.
I'm a huge Deadpool fan. I've been reading the books for a decade, probably 20 years. The trailers do a good job of representing the character on screen, but I don't know that that's going to be a good movie. I think it will be tiresome in movie form. 2 hours of him wisecracking. I'm worried about that.
Yeah.
That could turn out to be an absolute bomb.
I've got a feeling Suicide Squad's going to be disappointing. If the rumours are true that it's getting a 12A or a PG release, then it's not going to do it justice.
Yeah.
I'm really worried about the Ghostbusters reboot, whatever it is with the women. I don't think that'll be very good. And we saw a trailer the other day for Alice in Wonderland Through the Looking Glass.
Oh, dear God.
That will be the worst thing ever. And yoga hoses for you, Ben.
And you.
Oh, because you're thinking it's going to be good, yeah.
I've got hopes it'll be a masterpiece.
Jesus.
Sorry about that. You already know it's going to be bad, don't you? That Through the Looking Glass. Ugh.
Well, you know.
I thought you meant yoga.
As long as it's as good as the first one.
But it's going to be nice to see Johnny Depp work with Tim Burton for a change.
Just going off topic ever so slightly, Johnny Depp, I don't think he'll get anywhere near the Oscars for Black Mass, but it is the best thing he's done in a good long time. Have you both seen Black Mass?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was very good.
It's a shame. It's not a great film, but
I thought it dragged a bit, but his performance was fantastic.
Yeah.
Michelle Martin, what are some of the films that have been most thought-provoking for you? To be honest, even just only watching it the other day, Ex Machina, that was making me think quite a lot recently. Yeah. And Her was one where I re-questioned my whole life.
And that was also over a year ago. So doesn't really count.
I think there's certain things coming up that I think, like Room, I think that's going to be quite thought-provoking in the respect of, as much as you know, these things are quite far away from you, but they are actually still happening. And the fact that some people are still being kidnapped off the street, held by these, rapists. I think it's just going to really kind of hit home at some point. You're going to be thinking, this is actually still happening in this day and age.
Yeah. It's all got a bit of deep.
I don't know how deep it is.
My friend Stu Pickwin asked if he could have a couple of, and I'm going to let him have them. Okay. Rude. Should they now stop making Bond films?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
How
many Bond films are there?
21.
21, right. So there's 21 Bond films, and I've liked two of them.
There you go.
The first and the third Craig ones, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Didn't they stop making them after Skyfall? I haven't seen
that. That was the last. Here's something for you. This past year, three big spy movies came out. The last Bond one, Spectre. Mission Impossible 14, or whatever the fuck it is, and Man from U.N.C.L.E. Man from U.N.C.L.E., Mission Impossible 4, or whatever, 5, both brilliant. Spectre, absolute garbage. Who'd have thought that those two sort of cheesy kind of films would be infinitely better than Bond?
This question's quite relevant for you, Ben. Should it be legal to punch someone who talks or kicks in a seat at a cinema?
Yeah.
They should change the law. Yeah. Once you enter that cinema, it's like... you get all full rights.
It's like those assholes that were sitting next to me in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, I could have easily slit their throats, and yet I'd have been the criminal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
This country's backwards. I blame Cameron.
This bloody country.
Dan, Daniel Smith, what was the best performance of someone playing the opposite sex? That's not just this year, that's ever, in your opinion.
Benny Hill.
I like I'd Jared Leto.
Yeah, Jared Leto, yeah. But then he was playing a man playing a woman.
Yeah, well, yeah. He wasn't playing a woman, was he?
But I guess, I'd say Leto. I think his performance in Dallas Buyers Club is phenomenal.
He's very good in that, yeah.
A couple more. Sam Soden, the best use of a song in film?
Any Tarantino film. Stuck in the Middle with You with the ear cutting scene in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, big time. Big time.
Unreal.
I like Where Is My Mind on Fight Club at the end.
That's great.
That's great.
And Tiny Dancer on Almost Famous because of the scene. And then the final one, Alex, which is Things I Found. Which film character is the biggest in history? I will beep that, but people know what I mean. I like that question.
Oh, God.
Maybe Mark in the room for what he did to Johnny, because that is awful. His own best friend, you know what I mean? It's not on. That is pretty evil.
That's a tough question, actually.
I think people have probably seen the videos online where it kind of outlines this, but Daniel from The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
What a dickhead.
Yeah.
Arrives at this new school, you know, this lad has a bit of trouble with him,
yep.
Fair enough, but then he carries it on, you know, he puts water on him in the showers, mm-hmm. And he's such a dick. And then an illegal crane kick to the face to win a tournament. Illegal crane, you're not allowed to do that.
Can't do it.
But he gets away with it, and then, I mean, how, Billy Zabka, how just lovely is he at the end? He still congratulates me, yeah. Says, well done, man, you know, even though you cheated to win, I'm still going to shake your
hand.
Yeah,
and help lift you up.
He was just a young man trying to make his way in the world.
Yeah.
And he's portrayed as the villain.
Unbelievable.
He didn't use any illegal crane kicks.
Has James Corden ever been in a film?
He's been in trailers in front of films. The trailers that him and Christoph Waltz are in for that some piece of shit game.
Clash of Clans.
That
there
is
you
one
go.
Of the worst things I've
he
ever seen.
He gets the award.
I hate that. So Biff Tannen in the Back to the Future films is a C word, but in the best possible way. He's great. He's a great villain, but I love Biff.
So keep your questions coming. Go to skiptheend.co.uk and our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email, and everything is on there. And we'll answer even more in a couple of weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of the first episode of this brand new year. It's been a good show. It's been a good year. It's going to be another good year, isn't it, chaps?
I'm thinking so, yeah.
We've got a lot of good films to review ahead. I'm looking forward to it.
We're
really excited.
8 months off our 2-year anniversary.
Wow.
That's true, actually. Not long to go. In the upcoming weeks, we've got The Revenant coming up. We've got other big sort of Oscar bait movies like Spotlight. We've got Deadpool. We've got Batman versus Superman. We've got Civil War. We've got X-Men Apocalypse.
Rogue One.
And, you know, the Oscar films, although we can't review all of them, we will talk about performances and films in depth when we do our Oscar predictions, especially once the nominations are out as well next week.
So much good stuff coming in terms of reviews. There'll be more insane topics, ridiculous game shows. More Skip Back in Time, 1993, coming up next.
We've got loads. Competitions, I'm going to be giving loads away.
Wow. We give away so much.
Updates on The Room 2 and Mac and Me 2. And
we're going to try and get them out of legal hell.
Yeah.
Chuckle Brothers, we've got them coming
up. Don't
on
think
there.
We're not working in the background. We're working loads.
Well, people think we had Christmas up. We're in meetings constantly with these lawyers. And
Adam, I'd bloody love a day off.
So would I.
But we work so hard on this podcast. We don't get days off.
And Paul Chuckle is a nightmare to work with. I'm not going to lie.
Nightmare to get hold of.
He's a pain in the arse, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. But anyway, let's not you know, sour this episode with him. He's soured enough of our life over Christmas.
Yeah.
I've been in talks with Del Toro again. He's bringing the kebabs around.
Oh, this is good.
Lovely stuff.
So, on the next episode, you said The Revenant.
Yeah.
Wow, are we going to see the film that finally gets DiCaprio a golden statue?
Maybe.
They'll shut him.
Screw him over.
Just doesn't get a nomination at all.
Sod him.
So we've got that. What's our topic of conversation next time round?
The top three films that are based on a true story.
Excellent. And the skip back in time is
1993.
Nice.
And then in terms of a rewatch,
it's
for
your
you,
one.
It's going to be a watch.
Yeah.
It's Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie, and I implore you, dear listener, to watch this film with us. Find it on YouTube or Netflix or wherever you need to get it, legal or unlegal, whatever you need to do. Unlegal's not a word.
<It is now. laughs>
Do what you gotta do. Watch this film because it is mental.
Yeah. Well, that's it, because The Revenant's supposed to be mental as well, so it's Mental Week. Brilliant.
Yeah, can't join us mental. Next time for Mental Week.
Can't say mental.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Is that it?
Yeah. Oh, now we've got you being our quiz master for Lost in Translation next week.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. If it's anything to go by this week, I'm excited. Really excited.
Yeah. So, see you next time. Don't you ever be sad. I'll lean on me when the times get bad. When a day comes and you are down in a river of trouble, I'm about to drown. But just hold on. Get cold, I'll be your cover. You don't have to worry, because I'm here. I don't need to suffer, because I'm near.